juice you up.
You might want to put on a bathing suit, because you'll be channel surfing in no time.
He'll track you down.
Hey, buddy!
He shows up wherever I go. He won't leave me alone.
On June 14th, once you're hooked...
He's gonna need some tough love.
You're his.
Don't do that!
You're gonna get me killed!
Oh, Billy!
Jim Carrey. Matthew Broderick. The Cable Guy.
I'm just messing with you.
Rated PG-13. At theaters Friday, June 14th.
Vital signs are good.
Lights.
Cue the sign.
Camera.
Yeah!
Hey, Truman!
Sorry, can't stop!
Truman.
Say something. You're on television. You're live to the whole world.
That's amazing.
Jim Carrey is Truman Burbank.
Wanna do it again?
No!
In the movie Newsweek called the number one film to see this summer.
It's the miracle!
The Truman Show, rated PG. In theaters everywhere, Friday, June 5th.
Welcome back. We got Harry Ruttner from Chuckle with a Sickle. How you been?
Good. How are you?
I cannot deny that we're being experimental. We're doing more actor-themed specials, get movies that have a similar theme that they did throughout their career. And in this case, we picked a comedic, semi-dramatic actor, none other than the one, the only Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey, one of the best.
Absolutely. This was what you had mentioned, a few other movies that were kind of on the same page, and it was like, perfect, we could totally do kind of a mix that in with like a double feature. What was your intro to this complex man? It's unpredictable.
Jim Carrey, it has to be The Mask. It was the first time that I saw him back when I was a lot younger, and I always wanted to be I loved acting. And so I saw The Mask, and just the way that he physically acts blew my mind. And I just was so inspired by just his over the top nature. Obviously kids
no
movie.
No fear.
No fear at all. And then seeing that, and then straight away seeing Ace Ventura straight after, I was like, I was hooked. I was obsessed.
Like, you can't make this up.
Yeah, and it's funny. His characters are all pretty similar. Like, they're based on him in terms of those earlier movies. And I think they're just so quotable and just
so
hilarious.
So, so quotable. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good call. Because basically, I don't feel like one of these movies exists without the other. And given how... Hey, he's always been so experimental all these years. You know, it's just, I can't think of him not doing one of these movies down the road at this point, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
But yeah, so we're going to start off with where it began in chronological order in 96, The Cable Guy.
The Cable Guy, so, yeah.
This was a favorite. I would watch it every time I saw it on TBS, you know, TNT's parent company. And yeah. It's not a critical darling. Mm. And I had no idea growing up. I knew he goes all apeshit at the end, but I didn't realize they were making fun of Cape Fear, you know, or Hand That Rocks the Cradle type psycho thrillers. But I was like, okay, that makes sense. You know, that by 96, that was all the rage, you know, with Scream and all. But everyone just remembers just how he just goes bonkers, and it wasn't always ha 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 funny, but since I was already used to other kind of wacky stuff at that time, like Wishmaster and Gremlins, and I was able to watch this with family when it was on, and interested to my brother, and he thought it was amusing too, especially because Jack Black does younger in his career and he plays the straight guy.
Yeah, which was an interesting dynamic. I remember from that movie as well, something that always sticks in my memory is him walking up to the door. Just like the way that he struts, it's just like, it's just the absolutely most Jim Carrey entry that I've ever seen.
So unnerving. I remember when someone on YouTube like rescored it with music from The Matrix to make it all look all fancy.
Yeah, I just think his character in that movie as well, like, starts off like, you know, he's a little bit irritating, but for the most part, like, he seems like eccentric, but not what ends up happening at the end of the movie where he just does go bonkers.
Yeah, I and you needed someone like that who could just bring, I mean, you understand why, you know, I'm not a big Judd Apatow guy, but I understand why he's had success. But like, it's just so hard to believe that this one just completely flopped. Like, no one thought it was funny.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I've never been much of a Matthew Broderick guy, because he kind of just, other than Ferris Bueller, just seemed like he didn't really take advantage of that fame.
Yeah. I mean, Ferris Bueller's one of the best movies of all time.
He's kind of hated now because of his, he did a car accident, I think, back in the late 80s.
Yeah, I remember that.
He never served jail time, but I think he just didn't really take advantage of his fame. He kind of just did little low-key movies and just played himself and everyone. But here, he's okay. Like, any straight person would work in this one, just as the guy who's like, hey, he's just weird, but very oblivious to just what a dumb mistake he's doing. And
yeah,
I mean, you don't, unlike other Ben Stiller movies, you really don't have to see some of the other movies he's spoofing to get the jokes in this one.
Yeah, I mean, I just love the fact that it's directed by Ben Stiller. Like, I think he, growing up, I thought Ben Stiller was more of an actor than he was a director. But as I go through life, my God, he is a fantastic director.
Escape of Donna Dora is very amazing. He spoke very recently on a recent Howard Stern interview that he didn't realize that there was even a fan base for this movie. Because again, you know, this and Zoolander flopped, but Zoolander was very big because it was near the DVD craze, and this one was just always kind of the, I guess, you know, I just won an Emmy for a sitcom sketch show that just got canceled, and this was like the double slap in the face.
Yeah.
And critics aren't caring for it, people are only seeing it because Jim Carrey's in it, but not everyone's finding it funny, and because it's not laugh a minute kind of Jim Carrey. It's not gross out Jim Carrey. It's not Dumb and Dumber or Ace Ventura Jim Carrey. It's just Jim Carrey goes bananas, but has a soft spot, but still makes fun of. He embellishes this psycho. This is basically Tarantino if he didn't take enough Ritalin.
Yeah, and I feel like now it's got a cult following, because I know, like, I heard an interview, I think it was with Judd Apatow, about how much this flopped, and then nowadays
Sony did not promote it too well.
Yeah, I think nowadays everyone is like, you know, that was a really great film, like, people really enjoy it. I think not as much of a classic as some of his other films, but definitely a cult classic.
Dolly, and you can have limited experience to something, but you take it with a grain of salt. Like, I knew he was making fun of, like, Ben Stiller cameos as two twin serial killers. I knew he was making fun of some fictional thing, but I didn't realize he was making fun of the Menendez brothers at the time. Now, Jesus. I had gone to medieval times about 3 to 5 times growing up, so I knew about that. That's a big staple here. I don't know if they have it overseas at all.
No, we don't.
You do practice jousting, and it's like Chuck E. Cheese, but people are dressed as knights, and you're eating like medieval food.
I've been to one in the States, but unfortunately it hasn't come out here yet. Medieval times wasn't really a thing in Australia. Very different culture.
This is the highlight. They're just going out and hanging out, and they somehow encourage people to let them in the ring and pretend to be knights. And I love how Jim has watched too much Star Trek, so now he's trying to imitate the Kirk versus Spock fight. And he's like imitating the music, and again, everyone's like, what's going on? Yeah. Is he trying to kill you? Is he actually trying to kill you, or is he just creeping me out? You still don't know. It doesn't matter. It's just funny.
Yeah. I just think his face expresses so much emotion. I feel like he's similar to like Rowan Atkinson in that way. Just like such an expressive face that you're mesmerized by it.
absolutely. I don't have too many complaints. I wish Janine Garofalo kind of got to do a little more comedy, but she's kind of more, again, like Jack Black, kind of the dry comedy here. Bob Odenkirk's in there also as one of like the TV producer guys. I feel like that subplot was explored.
I completely forgot that Bob Odenkirk was on this film.
Yeah, he's at the fifth stage of his career now after so much behind the scenes writing and comedy ensembles. Do you have any favorite moments that also just... how about when he's in the prison cell and he's framed Matthew Broderick for murder somehow and he's like having his man boobs all over them. I'm like, what's going on?
I just feel like the entire script was written in like a chaotic frenzy and then it was just slammed together.
Really, it was a frenzy of a movie. Yeah.
Which is why I think that like it didn't really get the love that it should have gotten. But now that people are looking at it, you know, 20 years on, 30 years on, really, that you're looking back and be like, actually, there are so many fantastic moments from this film. I just think like anytime he's in someone's house actually fixing the cables is my favorite bits, because it's just like his interaction with just like a normie. And he's just like, if I was interacting with this guy in real life, I would be completely overwhelmed. I'd be like, I don't know which planet you're from, but whatever is going on needs to chill out.
Whatever happens next. It better be good.
yeah, exactly. But yeah, absolutely love that film. I think, as I kind of mentioned, Ben Stiller as a director has really got me hooked. But I also think Jack Black playing a straight character was quite weird to watch.
Especially when he's at the basketball court and he's like, is this a joke? Who invited this guy?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah. And I just think you see the complete opposite in every single other of the films that you've ever seen with Jack Black.
He doesn't know how to be normal. And the music is perfect at the end where it gets all zany and just reminds you, like, hey, this guy is a tragedy. He didn't just get here. But
yeah,
it still reminds you to kind of laugh. But I guess it's because it's kind of reminds me of Gremlins 2, where they're making fun of another kind of, hey, we're in a TV studio and we're broadcasting mischief. You know, it's kind of...
I've never seen Gremlins.
Oh, really? So, okay. Well, yeah.
I know it's a cult classic. That's for sure.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's just a similar. Last Action Hero was kind of another one that did this for years prior, where it made fun of what would happen if you got to meet your on-screen action hero, and then he met the guy who portrays the off-screen persona. Pretty illuminating and freaky all at the same time, and it just another movie that flopped. It just was, people just weren't ready for that. Unless it was like Scorsese or Spielberg or some bigger name doing it, people just weren't ready for that kind of takedown. And other people were like, I get the joke perfectly, I just don't find it funny. But I'm such a fan of this, I once bought the soundtrack at a thrift store.
Oh my god, that's how
and
much
you
love
even
it.
Hear the Jim Carrey song on there that he doesn't cover up, so...
Yeah, that's great. I mean, there's also like just some great quotes from the movie as well. I know one of the most popular ones is about like free cable being like the ultimate aphrodisiac, which is just like...
And I could relate. I had bootleg cable, but it was also one of those is like, it is interesting on how is like, it does go back to the whole you'll melt your brain if you do it all day, you know?
Yeah. I think it's funny because in Australia, we don't have cable. We have equivalents like Foxtel and other streaming platforms now. But even in Australia, we were so aware of cable and what it all meant. Because you watch so many American TV shows, like it makes sense. And just seeing this cable guy just being obsessed with something that we're like, it's like $15 a month. Like it's 30, $15 a month.
Yeah.
And this is your life. This is your livelihood. It's just nuts.
Something you could do without, but somehow you convince yourself, hey.
Yeah. I also just feel like people keeping a straight face throughout this film would have been really difficult. Like Jim Carrey is running up to you completely off his head, and him being able, like being the other actor, being able to just deal with it and be like, I mean, because Jim Carrey also improvises half the time, like you never know what he's going to do next. So watching their responses has also been great.
Yeah, he is definitely... But see, I kind of like this movie in a falling down way. I don't know if you ever saw that one.
No, I haven't seen Falling Down.
Really? Okay.
What's that about?
Basically, a guy who gets fed up with society and decides to become a gunman.
Oh, yeah, cool. Sounds chill.
Joel Schumacher directed, starring Michael Douglas and Barbara Hershey and Robert Duvall as a cop on his last day of the job. But that's another one.
Great cast.
It was not a hit until it was just on HBO all the time. And it's, I mean, what are some other movies that are kind of dark comedies that you've seen throughout the years and you're like, why didn't this catch up like wildfire?
Yeah, I think there hasn't been many dark comedies that I think have come really crazy, but I think the one that sticks out to me the most, oh, I guess it was a dark comedy, was for Death at a Funeral, the British comedy.
I love the original, yeah.
Yeah, the original one. And I watched that. I remember being in the cinema. Like, not many people had seen it because it was a British film, so people weren't really getting around it. And I've never laughed so much in my entire life as I did sitting in the cinema watching that film. Just like every aspect of it. Obviously, Peter Dinklage is in it as well before his Game of Thrones stint. And he was just...
such a hoot, yeah.
Just the cast of it as well. It was just like every British actor and their dog was in it. And I loved it. I loved every second of it. But I don't know what the reception was, because at least when I went to the cinema, there was like five of us in there and that was
I love the blooper reel at the end where you hear director Frank Oz trying to not laugh. But yeah, it's like somehow it didn't work for everybody. But I... more people have unfortunately seen the remake. And I'm like, no, doesn't even remotely touch it.
Could not get through the... I think I got 10 minutes into the remake and I couldn't. I was just like, I can't watch this any further.
Yeah, it's just not cutting the mustard.
Yeah, you know which movie that I found really had an ebb and flow is Zoolander. I found that I loved it as a kid, watched it in like my early 20s, hated it. Was like, this is so... like, I just couldn't get into it. And then I watched it recently because it was just on TV. Fantastic film. Absolutely hilarious, but there was like
the same way
it ebbed and flowed.
That one was very popular, and I just never caught on to it as much because I'm like, okay, this was when spoof movies were becoming too much, like 500 different jokes, and it was kind of like bad Monty Python fans where people overquoted to where like, yeah, but do you really get it, or you're not making it any funnier, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I just think that was the type of film that... I think there's a few like that where you watch it when you're young, you're like, oh, this is great, not really understanding what it's all about. Then you watch it a second time, you're like, didn't really understand why I loved it. And then later, you're actually thinking about it, and you're like, actually, there are a lot of elements to this film that are absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, just one of a kind. I didn't mind it growing up, but it is very, very dumb. So you have to really be in the mood for it.
Yeah. I feel like there's a few movies like that. We're the Millers. I don't know why. That movie always stuck out to me as something that, again, in cinema, really laughing, but not the smartest movie in the entire world.
No, but just very good with its off-color humor. But I think that was another one. It was just wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe came out a little bit too late in the game.
And those same people, I think, worked on Horrible Bosses.
Oh, yeah. Which I think was a big hit when it came out, I feel.
Yeah. I mean, it got a sequel that no one needed, but it just... it's interesting how the movie that starts the show isn't as well known, and yet...
yeah,
the one
true.
That's bigger... you have the kind of a role reversal in a way. So,
Yeah, I remember watching that one because Charlie Day was in it, and I was a huge "It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia" fan. So I was like, I have to watch the movie because Charlie Day. It's not so big. I don't know that many people that watch it. But I mean, I think it's probably one of the best TV shows of all time. So
interesting. Yeah. It's big in America. I mean, and it's like South Park. People who are douchey are already going to laugh at it, but people who get the jokes really, really relate to it because they're all bad people and then they have their real moments, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it's just every episode is just absolute side-splitting.
Totally. I applaud everyone who works on all those longtime comedy shows. I mean, and just hearing Dave Foley and other people talk about how they didn't know how big Kids in the Hall was going to be overseas.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You're targeting in America, but it's the pockets that really surprise you across the world.
Yeah, I'll be damned if just everything just rocks right away, because, you know, it's not easy. So
yeah, it's not like a Barbie or an Oppenheimer, which opening weekend goes gangbusters.
Oh, God. Yeah. I feel like we've covered most of the highlights of it. I think just if you're going to introduce people to it, like, if they've never seen it, just ask them what kind of, like, meta humor they're really into.
Yeah. And for them to watch it with an open mind.
Absolutely. Like, remind them, it's not going to be funny, ha ha ha,
yeah,
every minute. It's going to be more like, ooh, yikes, what happens next? What happens next?
Yeah, it's like it's so gripping in a terrible way in some senses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's so many ways to go about it. I just say, hey, just make use of it. I mean, it did all kinds of things here, and I wouldn't even call it experimentation. Like, it knew what it was doing. It just wasn't. Not every joke was fast enough for everybody.
Yeah, it wasn't run-of-the-mill. But I think looking back at it, you know, 30 years later, I think they did all right.
Absolutely. Like, compared to any other movie or show, which just felt like they were just, like, I don't think this would work even in an internet world now. I think this would be just, maybe the technology and effects might be better, but I think everyone would, it'd be like one of the lesser computer hacking movies of the 90s where you would just be like, okay, but
yeah,
stuff like that doesn't happen in real life.
No, it doesn't.
But yeah, I mean, so here we got another movie to pin this up to. The one, the only, Truman Show. And there was just an article on The Atlantic done a month ago on this one, talking about how this is how many metaphors this has for America's suburbia.
Yeah.
And once again, this is almost like The Running Man minus the violence. Like, if people want to do reality TV and watch a man whose life has literally been a lie.
Mm. Well, we actually studied it in school. It was one of our, like, main texts that we studied, to go through all the metaphors. We probably would have been early in our high school studying it, but one of my favorite movies, one of the openings for the podcast is The Truman Show on Chuck and a Sickie. So, you know, it's a pretty, it's got to be his most well-known movie, probably.
I've seen people start complaining about this rather recently. I last saw it in a sociology class, and I was still just blown away by it. There's literally, even looking at the professional critics, like, there's like maybe two iffy reviews, but everybody else is pretty much 90s. Everyone gets it. I'll admit, maybe there's a little bit of overacting, but that's deliberate. Like, that's just showing that, you know, actors pretend to be real people who are really just deceiving the main guy. The Atlantic, I think this article sums it up really well. It was released in the years that found the Star Report dominating headlines in series like The Jerry Springer Show, turning voyeurism into a way of life. It arrived shortly before Survivor and Big Brother premiered. It asked questions about the shape American culture would take as we prepared to enter a new century, and was not terribly optimistic about the answers. I think that's a wonderful write-up because,
yeah,
I got it instantly. I was a teen. I saw it with my mother, you know, and it was just one of those. It's like, hey, Peter Weir, you know, the Dead Poets Society, Master and Commander, you know, just Witness. He's done all kinds of wonderful, wonderful character studies, much like Milos Forman, who did Cuckoo's Nest and Man on the Moon, coincidentally with Jim Carrey. I feel like this is one of his not only best performances, but like it's a sleeper for Paramount. It was just one of those, it was a critical darling, but not everybody who was Jim's number one fan went out and saw it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it seems to, given how crazy the internet is, I still every once in a while will see people talk shit about it. And I'm like, and even the most cynical people tend to like this one because it's an easy to understand message. And it's, you know, Cable Guy is meta, while this one is more just, my life is a lie. So what do I do next? But yeah, it was the first thing I saw Natasha McElhone in. She's been in everything like Solaris, Designated Survivor, and Ronin. Still one of those Irish actresses. Ed Harris was wonderful in this as the villain because he just...
Yeah, watching over.
He was playing God and he brought life to it. And apparently, I think on Sci-Fi Channel, they did, around the late 90s, early 2000s, they would do some very meta, like, kind of before they would have like DVD like Marvel would do like those one-shot shorts, and other TV shows would have like DVD like exclusive like mini prequels before the premiere of the next season. And they kind of did that where they had like some characters just show the main villain just setting up his whole premise and how he has no shame in what he's doing, exploiting a man for ratings.
Well, I mean,
they're not single or one dimensional either. They just, it reads just like it does on the paper.
And I think what The Atlantic said about, you know, the time that it came out as well, it was Big Brother before it was, before Big Brother came out. I just think everything about it, one of my favorite bits from the movie is actually the ads that they have within the movie. I'm pretty sure it's for cereal.
I forgot about those.
Yeah. And it's like the little ads in between, which I don't know if you've seen WandaVision. They kind of do the same thing on WandaVision TV show. But I that really resonated with me. I was just like, it was hilarious. Like, what a ridiculous concept of having an ad for a fake cereal in a TV show in a movie.
Oh, hell, Ben Stiller does that, remember, at the beginning of Tropic Thunder, he has the fake movie ads.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's Jack Black and Eddie Murphy, Adam Sandler, gross out comedy where he's playing all the roles. Then they have another one where Robert Downey just pretend to be overdramatic and Oscar-winning, Oscar-bait movies.
Yeah. Well, this is the movie as well that I think I'd seen it after seeing Ace Ventura, after seeing The Mask, after seeing Cable Guy, where I'm like, you know, so much, like, he's such a diverse actor. Yes, he's so hilarious. The first, you know, 75% of the film is still really funny, and those interactions, like, if I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Like, just so many good quotes and, like,
he
hilarious
parts. He does have ones like that. Just almost like he's doing his mini Johnny Carson.
Yeah, and then, you know, as soon as he starts working out what's happening, and then he gets on the boat, it's just like his versatility is just astounding. And I think this film as well made him, at least in my mind, made him feel like a lot more of a serious actor. People weren't like, oh, you're just doing this physical comedy in these like movies that are rated, you know, 2.2 on IMDb or 6 on IMDb. It's like, okay, you can do a lot. You're a lot more than that.
Absolutely. I did re-see a 2019 episode of Inside the Actor's Studio a few years back. They air newer ones on Ovation, and he's definitely very proud of it still, but he did one where he talked about how later on in that interview, he talks about his weird walk-in on scene on the first Ace Ventura, and people have always noted how he uses his body kind of as a weapon in his performances. And I think that's his thing. Like he's going to town with that there. He's definitely, especially athletic and yes man as well. But like, he is always he, much like directors, he does believe in the staging of everything. And, given how woke he's gotten in very recent years and talked about different conspiracies and health and everything, just every choice he's done just feels justified. You can understand why he would want to do it. And this one, you know, like you say, this is where he really just broke the ice and then like melted and then built it from the ground up again. Just reminding us, hey, I can do this, but I've always wanted to do something like this. That is, I do think it's an important movie. Some people might feel it's a little outdated with some of the music, but I think they're just being too cynical.
Yeah, I mean, I still look at my mirror some mornings and I think, am I on the Truman Show? Like, it's just something that plagues your mind.
Yeah.
Like, after that for weeks, years.
It's more Big Brother than 1984 at times.
Yeah,
but
yeah, definitely.
A great movie that is kind of a kind of mildly science fiction without having to be directly, like, in your face, like, the book of version of 1984. Like, it doesn't...
Yeah.
It doesn't need effects to be even better. Most people often mistake that.
Yeah, and I think, just the whole concept of it, I love the fact as well that it really got you thinking. Obviously, it's why people study it in sociology classes, they study it at school. It's the type of movie that, stayed on my mind, I would say, probably for the next 10 years and
right?
more. Yeah, it's just something that you can never stop thinking about. And it's funny as well, because I think in the moments where I've thought about, you know, oh, you know, am I on the Truman Show? Just like, well, you know, like, who knows?
Always
could
being
be.
Watched. Danny Trejo, the comedian, not comedian, the actor.
Yeah.
character actor said in more recent interviews, like, hey, kids got to remember, hey, the camera's always on you, when he was talking about people misbehaving or having scandals. Mm. And now with even phones evolving, it's not getting any easier. So, and there's traffic lights at every other stop that can be used to incriminate you. So it's like, if you got nothing to hide, it's not a problem. But if you're known for just being not so discreet or embarrassing others, you're in trouble already. Especially if you want to run for Congress. So it's interesting in that, it does remind you, is like, what would I do different if I knew the nature of my reality was compromised, if I was in fact being spied upon illegally, you know? And in this station, the movie Boyhood was kind of like that, except that was more meta behind the scenes. They filmed it over the course of like 10 years as an actual kid grew up. And kept it very secret and just filmed it on weekends. So, you know, stuff like this can be experimental, but this one is really delicate in that, you know, you casted a wonderful cast, you know, Laura Linney is great as the actress hired to play his wife. Noah Emmerich has made a living being bad guys. And I like how here, this was the first thing I saw him in, but here he's like, hey, you know, they paid me to be your friend, you know, and it's funny. Yeah. They've been bullshitting long enough. None of their reactions are sincere, you know, because they know what they signed up for. It's kind of like a syntax you put on money. It's like they're collecting money from the devil in the details, you know?
But I think what's interesting as well, was something that you touched on earlier, is that I guess the way that the Truman Show is set up is essentially what our society is like now, except it's less... you know, we're in this fake reality. It's just more like reality is constantly less being meta. Recorded. And I think, you know, half the time in the Truman Show, you're like, oh, he's going to figure it out. Like, it's going to happen. And then it doesn't.
He doesn't know what's real versus fake because they've done a good job of hiding it. I like how they hint it earlier on. But I think it's a perfect movie. There might be a few scenes that, again, might be a little overdramatic, but I think that's just it dating a little bit. But the theme still stands out. I would never say, hey, it's a preachy, well-intended, but sappy movie. I would never say it's an Oscar bait movie, even though it was a critic darling and audiences were mixed, but mostly woke up to it after a while. I would never call it a ambitious but underwhelming, you know, mess, because, again, it was kind of the smart movie that stood out, because in 98, we were just burdened with so many asteroid movies and disaster movies and other conspiracy thrillers. So this was a good odd duck out that really became its own kind of sleeper film. I still see it occasionally airing on Showtime or remastered, because I think I don't know if they've ever done I would like to see a Blu-ray remaster of either movie. I'm sure we'll get it.
Yeah, one day. But I think it's interesting because this is the type of movie that I feel that no matter how far we go in the future, the concept will never be outdated. If anything, it'll just feel more realistic.
Absolutely. Okay, so I take it back. There is a 20th anniversary of The Cable Guy. It's got some new special features and an HBO First Look and Comedy Central making it. Okay, so do they have one for
The Truman Show?
Let's see if they got one for Truman Show. Blu-ray with special features. I could see Shout Factory doing that. Okay, so they got one from 09 when it first came out. A special features. It looks nice.
What type of special features does it have?
Let me see. What's it got? Okay. Looks like it's bare bones, which is a shame. But the Dolby and everything is presented well, so. All right, yeah, so it's out there.
Definitely makes me want to rewatch the film, that's for sure.
Totally. But yeah, Natasha McElhone was wonderful in that as the fan who actually believes in him and wants him to get away. I think you needed that to have at least someone as an audience who's looking into it, as opposed to implying that only the audience is just as bad as the filmmakers doing this unethical show. I mean, because like they've done so many other things years later. Mm. Like they did... So the U.S. never had a shortage of infamous, you know, reality TV shows. They had one that was The Moment of Truth. which was very irrelevant, where they were just like trying to catch people in the lie.
Oh, yeah.
Half the time it was embarrassing stuff. It just wasn't a good quality show. We made fun of it in, I think, senior year of high school, where we had to kind of make fun of stuff, and it backfired because we too were just like too ambitious with it, because there's no point. There's no drama if you don't tell a lie, and we know you're a liar anyway. And half the time it was like, whoa, how do you find that stuff out? That should be illegal. I think they got in some lawsuits for it, and they just had to cancel it because it just wasn't too much unwanted negative press. But I feel like reality TV, I mean, I have been on Sold TV pilot years ago up in like Austin, Texas, that was like about a distilled vodka company. And again, the producers had to encourage, hey, you told me about this and that. How about you play more into that? How about you guys, you know, friend to kick each other's ass? You know?
Yeah. I feel like with this movie as well, I forgot about, for a moment, I forgot about the people watching it on the outside, and the person in the bathtub. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Lots of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. They do it well.
That is true too. They do good with all the other mild supporting characters. Like they have like photographers who have wandered onto set and who are trying to hide him while he's oblivious to it. And so he doesn't think anything else of it. He's like, that was weird.
Yeah.
And Jim's just really good with his expressions in this one. It's, and kudos to the cinematographers and staging and lighting, because it sets the mood without causing any more confusion. It never feels like a bad Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, I think they just do it. I mean, it's subtle, but not so subtle. So for the viewer, obviously, it's quite obvious. But I love how they make it subtle for Jim Carrey. Those type of small interactions.
Absolutely. The small interactions, and that's just it. Like, and then you see, again, Laura Linney as the actress playing his life. She really regrets what she's doing. She doesn't. She's regretting this being her payday, you know? You know, and again, I like how some of the other TV techs are like, are you sure you want to do this, boss? Like, they're having a change of heart. Like, and it just feels very organic. Like, anyone else would be just too much. There would probably be too much playing to the camera if it was anyone else producing this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think
if this was a very overdramatic, ego-headed star, like, this would probably be a very bad vanity project. Like, if this was an Eddie Murphy comedy, it would probably just... One thing I noticed about when Eddie does some serious stuff is it doesn't always blend well with when he eventually has to have that dramatic arc. And that says a lot for Jim Carrey, because sometimes he would have that too, where, you know, the brakes fall off the hinges, and then you are just waiting for the next funny moment in the last half.
And I think that's why it was surprising how well he did this, because I didn't know whether he would be able to have the capacity to do that at the time. And then watching it really, it was really inspired. It was a really inspired choice, and he was great.
Sorry, totally. Much like this one, too. I think you could have more luck making it today. But it would still be a little ambitious, probably for its own good. Because, like, again, someone would want to have, like, tons of virtual reality. Like, this is a year before The Matrix. We were doing cyberpunkish movies. But, like, this is more kind of just the cake is a lie. How do I... return to reality and discover humanity for the first time.
Way too much CGI would happen nowadays. That's
absolutely
for sure.
There would be overbearing rap music playing. There would have to be a lot of "See What I Did There" gags.
Yeah.
Produced by Adam McKay and Will Ferrell. Nothing against those guys, but it'd be a whole different movie. It'd be such a different kind of oyster. I don't want to even think of recasting redoing this.
Oh, I really hope they don't redo it. I hope they leave it as
please
the,
don't remake it.
The,
don't
the
make
golden
it a
nugget
TV
it,
show.
It was.
Don't make it a TNT miniseries. Please don't.
Just leave it as is. Leave it in its perfection.
Mm-hmm. Just be too much.
Definitely.
Cable Guy would be a toll in this fire if you did nowadays. This one could work in a different person, but I doubt you would have just the beats that Ware and crew inject into it to make the build up pay off.
I just feel as well you did it nowadays, it would just be, it would feel a lot more fake. I think the fact that they did it at a time.
That's a good point.
It was totally perfect. Yeah. Whereas like when you're watching it, you know that it's fake, but you're drawn into that world. I guess that's the whole point. The
same thing with Running Man. Like you had to be there to get what you got back then. Like, believe it or not, Steven DeSouza even asked the future producer of American Gladiators. He's like, how'd you get that idea?
Yeah.
He said, I got it from your movie, but I took it literally without any of the satire. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. The Running Man is not a perfect movie, but you can't say it's a stupid movie either. It's just it's trying to do two things at once. It's trying to have a cool sci-fi B-movie plot that would be probably worked better in the 70s, and it's also trying to be a Schwarzenegger, you know, action film. So, this is the same kind of deal where it's just like... who would you pick nowadays? Because it just seems like everybody likes to just...
I don't know who would fit the role. I have no idea who would actually fit it. I would say the perfect person would be Jim Carrey, but older. But
ooh,
you know, I can't really think of, you know, like a Tom Holland or a Benedict Cumberbatch or who knows.
He's unfortunately retired, so, you know.
Yeah, true.
But at least he's left us with this legacy. It never felt like he left.
Yeah, exactly. We can watch it for years on.
Yeah. Funny how it works. But yeah, that's true. Had it come out like post Survivor and
It just wouldn't have had the edge that it did when it came out. I think it was just such a unique concept at the time that
people would
any
be
later,
too aware you're trying to imitate this.
Just it's overdone at this point.
And altogether, I mean, we get a good idea. We just feel like nowadays filmmakers like to over-explain stuff. And we always seem to just even have producers who feel like audiences are just too dumb to get it. It's nothing personal, but they're even overthinking it. It's like, no.
And nowadays, yeah, I just think it was a product of its time that worked perfectly, and I think nowadays they wouldn't be able to replicate that.
We just have too many controversial hot takes or heated moments.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this has been a delight. Thank you ever so much for arranging this chat, and anything you would like to promote, Harry?
I'd love to promote the Chucking a Sickie podcast, all about your perfect day off. Of course, Cam, you are a guest on the pod as well.
I wonder how that happened. Yeah. Thank you for having me on that. It was great to just vent and share some natural comedy.
Yeah.
That's what was weird, just taking improv in college, when you have to remind everyone, hey, don't try to be funny. Just let loose.
Life is inherently funny.
Your musings will write themselves, and it's all organic. You can't recreate that. It's all funny, and if you try to be scripted, it's generally not funny.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was great having you on the show. We get a whole bunch of different comedians in, actors,
great,
playwrights,
great stuff.
Yeah, so thanks so much for having me on Jacked Up Review Show podcast.
Anytime. Welcome back anytime. I promise we'll do some other fun crossovers, and man, this was too much fun.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Okay.
All right, I'm going to stop that.
We'll return after these messages.
The Jacked Up Review Show podcast is honored to be part of the Blind Knowledge Podcast Network. Join anytime, talk the talk, and enjoy yourselves. There's something enlightening for everyone with this crowd of cool cats. Check them out.
Hey, Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, give it up, Jimmy, you got to sink this putt to win. On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.